Das Radio Regenbogen Star Interview.
Seine Songs haben die 2000er Jahre absolut mitgeprägt. Die Rede ist von Marlon Rudette. Einfach ein wahnsinnig sympathischer und lustiger Mensch mit einem ziemlich unkonventionellen Lebensstil, der aber für ihn wunderbar funktioniert. Ich bin Clara Schad und hatte die Ehre, mit ihm zu sprechen und mir hat's unheimlich viel Spaß gemacht. Aber hört selbst. Hello, Marlon Rudette.
Hallo, freut mich. Wie geht's euch?
Perfect. How are you?
Yeah, super. I'm really good. I'm happy. And you know, anytime I'm back in Germany, I'm a happy man.
That's so great to hear,
yes.
Actually.
Yes.
And then congratulations on your new single, No Water.
Come on.
I really, really enjoy the track.
Thank you.
And I believe it could be very relatable for a lot of people out there.
Yeah.
There's no water here, but I'm drowning. To me, it sounds like the silent mental struggle that a lot of people have. What did you have in mind when you wrote the song?
Well, you said this was going to be a serious interview. You weren't lying. thank you for bringing up that lyric and making that point, because I think that we've had an unprecedented few years since, you know, Corona. And I think that a lot of people can identify with the ups and downs that have come with, you know, the various struggles in life. And this song for me is about several of those things that happened to me in life, in and around lockdown. Obviously, the Corona thing was just a part of it. And, you know, from what I'm hearing from a lot of people, that I've articulated something that they found it hard to do. So, you know, that's why I think this has been the most emotional release to a song. The messages that I've got about this song have been more powerful than any of my previous releases, you know.
And it shows what some piano and
That's really right. Simple
beat
yeah.
can do when the lyrics hit hard.
That's right.
It's one of those songs that I think can make you weep at times.
Yeah.
But also you can really enjoy and relax while listening to it.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, it's the only song that gets me like crying on stage. You know, it takes a second for me to pull myself together, take a deep breath and really perform that song. And I think, you know, it took a little bravery for us. I've never released a song that's just voice and piano. You know, the vocal was quite exposed. And for me, you know, I've never really seen myself as a, you know, technically amazing singer. I have a good tone. I know how to get emotion across. But I kind of stumbled into being a singer and, you know, the lead singer in Matterfix and then solo artist. I never thought that was going to happen. So for me to like really put myself out there and just have the vocal and piano took a little bit of, convincing.
I can only imagine. Now, I think a lot of the time when you feel bad, speaking about it means you're already in the process of overcoming it.
Mm.
So maybe, was it like that when you wrote the song? Do you feel better mentally than when you wrote it?
Oh, definitely. I've always found it hard to write songs in the moment that it's happening. The songs that I write when I'm at that moment depressed are just, you know, they're not listenable. It's always when I start to feel a bit more positive and I come out of it and I look back that I get the best lyrics. And that's what happened here. So I actually, you know, wrote this about looking back. But also, it's hard to tell this songwriting thing. One of the reasons it's so addictive is because I don't understand it. I don't understand when the inspiration comes or how. I just know that when it does, you have to kind of hold on to it and stay in the studio until it's done, until it's finished. And that's with this, you know, it's one of those songs where everything kind of hit me, especially the chorus lyrics. They all hit me in one go, and I almost couldn't write them down fast enough. Yeah, it's a crazy process. And I think maybe social media doesn't really do justice to how difficult the songwriting process is. I think we make it look very easy online.
now that you mentioned social media, would you say your songwriting process has changed? For example, I mean, you're also writing for many other artists regarding like TikTok and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's changed the game because now you only need a piece of a song to be a hit. You know, I have two boys, 10 and 6 years old, and they just need a slice of, and it might not be the chorus, it might be the drop, it might be something. So that's been really interesting. So in the studio, you're very much aware of writing songs that catch the attention quick. And also you're very aware of writing lyrics that have a broader context. Maybe there's a body positivity lyric in there, or there's something that a lot of influences can catch on to. And sometimes, yeah, you feel a bit dirty trying to think about songwriting like that. But I think that was always the way, you know, songwriters have always tried to capture the attention of the audience in some way. But yeah, if you can do it with a positive song, I think that's what, you know, that's what gives me a lot of satisfaction.
I also read that you co-write so many songs.
Yeah.
For example, you just recently worked with Georgia Smith.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so I had a cut on her recent album. And I did her single last year as well, featuring Popcorn, Come Over. So obviously she's a big star in the UK.
I personally love her. So yeah. When I read that, I was like, whoa.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of people feel like, what happened to Marlon? You know, I haven't been doing anything lately, but I'm always in the studio, always creating, always writing.
Would you say that's at the moment your focus, or do you also look forward to maybe putting out an album soon?
Yeah, well, I think that's been an interesting question because I think they're two very different things. I really enjoy helping younger artists find their voice and using some of my experience to help them tell their story and navigate the music business. I've had some great times in the music business, but I've also had a lot of mistakes and a lot of failures as well, and that's all part of it, and that's something that I can share. But then occasionally you get a story that's so personal that you don't want to give it away, you don't want to let it go to anyone else, and No Water, my recent single, I think is one of those.
Are you a person that needs a lot of silence? I'm trying to picture you in the studio like...
I don't get a lot of silence in my life. My life is pretty crazy. There's a lot of different countries, a lot of traveling, a lot of flying around. I have a very big, very loud family, a lot of big personalities.
And they're super musical.
They're super musical, yeah. My stepmother, Nana Cherry, was obviously a global superstar. My uncle Eagle Eye, same thing. My little sister Mabel, I wrote a lot for her first album, and I'm writing with her on her third album now. And she's obviously a huge pop star in the UK. So, you know, Christmas dinner at our house it's pretty mind-blowing.
I can only imagine. Because also when I researched you, I'm going to be honest, right?
Yeah.
I didn't know everything from scratch. Did that, I was like, damn, those genetics...
Yeah, it's
wild.
It's incredible, yeah. In the beginning, I, you know, wanted to go into film. I actually studied film and photography because that's where I thought my strengths lay. But bit by bit, I started to miss music a lot. And then, you know, Matterfix happened and the rest is history.
You also recently worked on a film, I read.
Yes, that's right. So I grew up, you know, my mother is from the Caribbean originally. And I grew up, spent half my childhood there in St. Vincent and the Grenadines. And a couple of years ago, the active volcano there erupted. And I was very active in the recovery and the immediate aftermath in terms of raising money. And we put a volcano relief fund together. And so we decided to show a film originally just for the people that sponsored and sent money, just to show them what we'd been up to. But then it spiraled into something a bit bigger and it became a bit more of an expression. And also I'm very, very happy that Colin Brown, the director, is a local guy, born and bred, learnt his trade in St. Vincent. And, you know, it's a very small population. So to have someone who's doing international films of that level from the island is, you know, we're very, very proud of him.
That's really cool. And when will the film be released, or when will we be able to watch it?
So that's coming soon. It's a very short film, but it's coming soon. We've just had to wait for the sort of film festival season. So it got into Fort Lauderdale, Florida Film Festival, which was amazing. So yeah, stay tuned. I'm not very good on social media, but I will be promoting that. I think that's one of my great weaknesses as an artist, is that I log off social media for many months at a time.
But it does feel peaceful, doesn't it?
Oh, it feels amazing. I could probably be so much more successful, but I don't sometimes have that necessary self-promotion gene that I think I admire in a lot of young artists these days.
I get it, though. I think you don't want to seem so self-centered.
Yeah.
And then, like, you're promoting something and then you're putting out another post and then you're like, ugh, I don't want to put out another one, but maybe it could help.
Yeah, you know, I think there were many reasons why I slowed my own thing down. But, you know, I think it's funny. I've always had a strange relationship with fame. Probably drives my manager and my record company mad. But there were several red carpet events where I walked behind the paparazzi and got in from the side. It's always been a weird thing for me, being uncomfortable in front of the lens. And, you know, maybe it's because originally I was in the background in the studio. So I was the songwriter, I was, you know, making the beats, I was producing. And, you know, I never really thought of myself being in the spotlight.
But walking behind the paparazzis is a power move, I'm going to be honest.
That's true. That is a power play. It is a power play. Unfortunately, I probably, whatever song I was promoting at the time, probably didn't do as well as a result.
If the listeners could see our studio right now.
Yes, come on. It's very festive.
Very festive. Very big winter vibes.
Yeah, it's giving winter vibes. There's fake snow. There's lights. There's mistletoe. Come on, this is like the first Christmas decorated space that I've been in this year. We're going to start hearing Mariah Carey soon.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
She's defrosting.
She is. Does it make you uncomfortable, or are you rather looking forward to the festive season?
Well, you know, I was Grinch for years. Christmas was not something that I particularly enjoyed. I like going back to the Caribbean and hanging out with friends. Since having kids, that's all changed. It's a cliche, but having, you know, presents under the tree, the smell of Glühwein in the house. I like some Glühwein. Now I really enjoy it.
Yeah. I would say Christmas, being a kid or when you have kids, it's just different.
Yeah. And also, you know, being a parent, being a dad is a great excuse to buy all the presents that you wanted to play with as a kid, but you could never afford. My apartment is a real boys' den. Computer games and Nerf guns and Monopoly, giant Monopoly boards.
Oh my God. Yeah. Sounds like a lot of boys' paradise, probably.
Yeah. Flying drones around the house. God. It's like crazy. My neighbor downstairs hates me.
Oh my God. But I don't know, maybe it's a weird question, but what's it like being a dad?
Well, I've had maybe a little bit of a different experience than I'd planned, because I'm not with the mother of my children. So my boys live in Switzerland, so I fly over every 3 or 4 weeks to Switzerland to be a dad and hang out and do a daddy week. And so, yeah, so it's a bit different. So I find that I have to sort of concentrate a lot of experiences into a short period of time with them. But it's incredible. You know, the speed at which they learn things is incredible. My boys speak Hochdeutsch, High German, Schweizerdeutsch. They know fluent English. They speak to me. They're now learning French. And when my 10-year-old is obsessed with anime, so he's now learning Japanese, right? It's incredible. You can't, I don't know if I can say this on the radio, you can't bullshit kids these days, because there's so much information available if they have access to YouTube. You know, so you just have to kind of be honest with them and have those honest chats early. And I do a lot of Googling, because the questions that are coming at me now are of a high level. Yeah.
It is a unique experience that you described. And I can only imagine, like, flying all the way to make dad jokes. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Well, I've always loved a dad joke, but now I have a great excuse to tell them. It's the ultimate, you know, sort of humbling experience being a dad, because, you know, if I trip over a Lego, there's an eruption of laughter in my apartment.
There's no worse feeling, by the way.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. It should be illegal to leave Lego for a barefooted father at midnight to step on.
This. 100 times this. Oh my God. I actually snooped a little bit through our Radio Regenbogen YouTube account.
Oh.
And I found an interview with you.
Okay.
Where you mentioned you were in the Europapark.
Yes.
For the Radio Regenbogen Award.
That's right.
And you mentioned that you actually were scared of roller coasters.
Yeah, this is true.
Is it still this way?
It's strange, because I love fast cars. I've raced cars. I enjoy cliff diving and jumping. And a friend of mine in Switzerland is a pilot, and we take up these tiny little planes. I snowboard. I do all this other stuff. But for some reason, roller coasters just freak the hell out of me. I don't know what it is. But I think it's something that I'm going to have to overcome, because my 10-year-old is getting very, very close now to going on the big rides at Europa Park. I don't want to let him down.
So you were fine with the small ones, but the big ones, they're a bit of a hurdle.
It, you know what it is? It's the one, the corkscrew ones, the ones that go down and then spiral.
The one with the loopings, I think, is actually fine.
Yeah.
But I also agree, when you just go up.
Yeah.
And it goes up so slowly.
And then leaves you dangling, hanging at the end. Yeah.
And then, oh my God.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny how we push each other, because we recently went on a camping holiday in Switzerland, and, you know, we were quite high up in the mountains. The water was freezing. But my son went in. He went swimming, right? And he was like, come on, Dad. And I was like, wow, okay. There's no way I would have dreamt of going in water that cold. But cool, I see my son doing it, and, you know, I don't want to be a wimp.
He's pushing you to the limit.
Yeah, exactly, to the limit, exactly.
I mean, this way you don't become older and, I don't want to say boring, but some older people, like, as soon as you realize how dangerous everything is.
That's it. As soon as you start to think about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think my key for growing older is immaturity. I want to stay as silly and as immature as possible for as long as possible.
Might want to start going on roller coasters
that's
then.
That's it. Okay, that's the next step. Done. Deal. If I tell you what, if I win the Regenbogen Award in 2023, hint, hint, I will go on those roller coasters at Europa Park.
Okay. We'll get back to that. Now I prepared some either or questions. I love either or questions.
Okay.
So they're really short, but you are allowed to answer a longer sentence if you want. Coffee or tea? I think this is always really interesting with British people.
I love coffee. I love coffee, but I'm an addict. So if I start to drink coffee, I have a cappuccino in the morning, and then I'm going to need an espresso after lunch, and then 3-4 o'clock I'm getting sleepy and I might need a flat white, and then all of a sudden I'm on 5-6 coffees a day and I'm not sleeping. So that's why I drink tea, and I'm a bit of a tea snob. You know, I like certain types of tea made in a certain way. I'm typically British in that way.
Do you prefer loose tea over tea bags?
Oh, 100%. But that's always a time issue, you know what I mean? Because brewing a loose leaf tea, you have to take your time with it. You can't rush it. But a smoky Earl Grey loose leaf tea, especially the one they sell at Fortnum & Mason in London. But if I'm in a rush, studio, cutting a vocal or whatever, then I'll take a Yorkshire tea with milk. Boom.
So always milk.
Yeah.
Always. And sugar?
No. I have nothing against those that want sugar in their tea, but I'm a... We call it a builder's tea in London. It's just milk.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a builder's.
Never mind.
Yeah, you guys put lemon in your tea here. That's shocking.
Yeah.
Like, you can't be doing that. Come on, Germany, what's happening?
Yeah.
There's
a lot of fruity teas as well. Now, I know you said you're kind of still scared of roller coasters, but do you prefer an amusement park over a regular park?
Oh, a regular park as in just a nice open green space. Nah,
yes.
Give me an open green space, relaxing vibes.
Wine or beer?
I love wine. I'm lucky enough to live only 3 hours drive from Italy, or partly live 3 hours drive from Italy. So yeah, a lot of good wine from the Piemont region. Come on.
So red?
Yeah, red. A Barolo.
The one that really tickles.
Yeah, the one that... It's truth.
And the food that goes with it.
Oh, come on. I mean, yeah, Italy, I just have a soft spot in my heart for all things Italian.
Same. And they're also really, really child friendly.
Thank you.
Right?
So you go on holiday in Italy and you walk into a restaurant with young children, and the waiter will be like, ah, bambino, ba-da-da. And before you know it, they've taken your child. He's in the kitchen making pizza and having the time of his life. And I love that, because sometimes as a parent, you can feel a bit weird with young children going into a restaurant. People look at you like, oh, they're going to make loads of noise.
They throw a little tantrum and everyone starts looking at you like,
Yeah.
You brought your kid.
Exactly. I had the honor a few years ago to tour with Zucchero, you know, the famous Italian artist, amazing guy. But he had to eat after every show. And they would shut down the Italian restaurant in whatever town we were in. You know, if we were in Frankfurt, if we were in Mannheim, wherever we were. And it was beautiful to see because they'd shut it down. All the families of everyone who worked in the restaurant would come out. And there's an art to living in Italy, which I really appreciate.
Okay, we have two more either ors. Going out or staying in?
Oh, I'm a staying in kind of guy. You know, it has to be a really good event for me to get me out in London these days or wherever I am, you know. And also, I have a great record collection at home, great books, you know what I mean? It's a vibe.
Totally. I'm the same. Night owl or morning person? What are you?
Wow. I've become a morning person over time after spending most of my early adult years trying to sleep in. I've become a morning person and I need to get up early now and get that good breakfast, get that exercise in. So yeah, I'd say morning. Never thought I'd say that in my life.
I mean, it also depends. For example, I would say I'm a morning person, but getting up for work sometimes, like it depends. Sometimes it's 3:30. And sometimes it's maybe 5.
Ooh.
So I would say 3:30, that's an unholy time.
Very.
But 5, yeah, I would say I can deal. It depends what type of morning you mean.
You mean real morning, like hard working. I'm good. 6:30 is a good start for me.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that's a lion for you. That's that's a Sunday morning for you.
With festive season in place, I've thought about just going over to London for maybe a quick weekend because I always see all the TikToks and just on social media, it always looks so cool.
It's all a lie. It's filters.
It is?
No, listen, London at Christmas, there's certain places. Yeah, Regent Street with the lights. Hyde Park is beautiful. I complain about it because I live there, but it's beautiful.
It can't be crazier than it is in our studio right now.
No, exactly. Here, you guys have really gone in. Also, we have some great German Christmas markets in London that you might be...
And where do they serve the best Glühwein there?
The best Glühwein? My area, West London, where I was born, we have a famous market, Portobello Road Market, which is very touristy at the Notting Hill end, but if you go up towards Goulbourne Road, it still has a little flavour, a little vibe. I don't know if you'll get Glühwein there, but you'll get some good vibes for sure.
It's so nice there. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I've been there, not during Christmas time, but I really enjoyed it there. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God. We talked about so many cool things.
We got through some topics.
Right. At the beginning of the interview, I said, oh, hold on.
Yeah,
I prepared some serious questions, but we still did laugh quite a bit.
Yeah.
So I think it wasn't all too bad, was it?
What's this phrase in German? Lachen ist die beste Medizin?
Oh my God,
there you go.
Lachen ist die beste Medizin.
Lachen ist die beste Medizin. There you go.
That's so sweet. And I would say that's the end of this interview.
Thank you.
Perfect words for the end. Thank you so much.
Ciao.
It was so lovely to talk to you.
Me too. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.